Blog Talk Radio.
Radio. And our news analysis is that an anatomy of repression requires an anatomy of colonialism and imperialism. It requires an anatomy of the American capitalist system. And we believe in liberation, and we believe in freeing our political prisoners, and we believe, as our brother Jaleel Montekin told us, that we are our own liberators. And tonight, one of our themes is, will the Democrats play the same race card again? Only this time with Michelle Obama. And will black people go for it again? And we have some very esteemed panelists this evening. Brother Ralph, of course. Our sister Anne of Jericho, of course, and we have a very, very special guest that will be coming on to recite some liberation poetry for us, and we have a special guest, a family member of a political prisoner. Brother Ralph, your mic is open.
Good evening, brothers and sisters. Ralph Pointer and What I Believe. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. Now, speaking of now being the time, I say it is later than we think. It is later than we all think. Because I heard a chronicler of World War II speaking of the minds of the German people. And the conclusion was, the faculties of critical thinking of the German people have been so damaged by constant lies that they are not capable of reason. And that gave me a start. And I thought, the faculties of critical thinking of Americans have been so damaged by constant lies, starting with the false belief that Columbus was a savior for the indigenous people, that slavery was a benevolent act, that imperialism is fair trade, and with those types of lies for hundreds of years, the American people are not capable of reason. Now, what facts do I have to back that up? Well, every day on the radio and the television of the so-called thinkers of progressive people are, did Russia involve themselves in the American electoral process? And the only answer that I can come up with that is, staring buck-eyed into the sky and say, duh, did Russia involve itself in American politics? Do you know what the Monroe Doctrine is all about? Do you know what imperialism is all about? Do you know what the history of America's involvement in the politics of the world is? How in the world can anyone give a damn about anybody involving themselves in American politics? And anyone who is concerned about Russian involvement in American politics has to say to themselves, are American brains totally scattered? Will they go for anything? As Malcolm says, if you don't stand for something, you will fall for anything. And we've seen the American people who have been bombarded with lies for all, ever since its inception. How can they think reasonably? We have the black community dancing in the streets with the election of Obama. And as Glenn Ford tells us, false hope and short change. We see that 70%, 65 to 70% of the American electorate are talking about single-payer health care, and we don't have it. And we saw a sweep of the Democrats in the midterm elections in the House. And what are they saying? Single-payer health care? No. They're saying that they're going to improve on Obamacare that allows the corporations and the pharmaceuticals to take advantage of the American people. And there's no outcry. They're still talking about the joy of the elections. And I remember having a discussion with Sister Lynn Stewart in the early years. And, you know, the question was, is there any democracy in America? And I said to her, people of color have no democracy. And she says, what's unusual about that? White people in America have no democracy. And my response to that was, yes, but black people can least afford no democracy. And here we face up with the reality that everyone understands and knows that single-payer health care is the answer to better health. And those who we run to the polls to elect are not talking about single-payer. I remember 10 years ago when we were talking about single-payer health care, I said, what is this? The doctors are getting arrested in Washington talking about single-payer health care. Where are the political movements? We must be in Washington getting arrested for single-payer health care. All of these years, the left is still not catching up. Means that we, the Americans, have been so bombarded with so many lies that we are not capable of reason. I have been given the hook, but think of these thoughts. Will they give us Michelle? And I fear, I tremble. They're lining up. The book is out, and she's on every newsstand saying, no, not me. And that means yes. Or will we get a rehashing of the Mrs. Clinton show? Are they going to Barry Sanders, or Barry, excuse me, Bernie Sanders all over again, rehashing old soup? And this time I really have the hook. Hook your teeth into some of these subjects or any subject you would like to speak of this evening. Sister Betty Davis, you have the mic.
All right. You heard it. You heard it from Brother Ralph. He gave you his prognosis. And I think black people will go for the okey-doke again. Because as Stephen Biko, our wonderful South African nationalist, said, the most powerful tool in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And I want to thank all of our people who are on the broadcast tonight, because that's our job, as our wonderful Garvey told us, when all else fails to educate people, reality will. Well, I don't want the reality of the gas chambers to educate black people. I want to educate our oppressed people so that we never end up in the gas chambers. And we have a very special guest tonight. She is the daughter of one of our most beloved political prisoners. Sister Kasise Sadike, your mic is open, and we welcome you, and we are honored to have
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kasise.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Waiting
good.
For your word of wisdom.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I want to thank everyone first just for being so supportive of my father. It's interesting that after performing my one woman show in DC for the Black is Back Coalition, for the Black is Back Conference, that my father emailed me with the urgency of, you know, what's going on with him in terms of the Augusta State Medical Facility wanting to amputate his leg. And so, you know, I had to make the calls, and I love my father so much and just got right on it. And so many people have, you know, been so supportive. And I just wanted to give, well, I want to say thanks, and I just wanted to give an update on just my father, his lawyer, Terry, and his lawyer, Terry, went to go see him on Friday. And first, this is from him. He says, thanks to everyone who called and wrote and prayed on my behalf. It was effective and much appreciated. He's in the process of getting a biopsy. You know, they are not going to amputate his foot. The thing, too, is that this is, you know, he has been neglected for 2 years. And so finally, I think with everyone standing up, making some serious noise, you know, put that prison definitely on the map in terms of the kind of neglect that they, you know, they give to their prisoners. So I'm feeling emotional. I'm feeling so many things. You know, I in my play, I said, he asked me to be his voice, and I am his voice. And so whenever the call is that he needs me, I have to be there for him, you know. So I want to really thank everyone. And if you have any questions, you know, in terms of the next steps, I mean, he has to get this procedure. They're going to do a biopsy to see what's going on. The lawyers definitely don't want them to move ahead in terms of the results being amputation. You know, we did say he needs proper treatment and care. And I plan to go visit him as soon as possible, too. My sister and I want to see him.
That'd be great.
So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much. And we have to thank your father.
Yes.
As Stuart said, creating the space in which we lesser revolutionaries can operate, and is only just that we support our political prisoners because any people who loses touch with its warrior class will soon be doomed. Thank you, Father, mm-hmm. for us. Stay in touch to help your father. Bring him home. Let him know we haven't forgotten, and we're trying to raise the cry for those to understand that in defending political prisoners, we defend ourselves. Thank you for that this evening, Kasise.
Sister Kasise, thank you so much for calling in. We know you just got in after a long day. You and Ann Lam and Gwen are awesome because you come straight to the mic from work. And I really, really cannot thank you enough. All I can say is, if not us, then who? If we don't do this work of trying to let people know that there is a reality out here, other than the misinformation they're getting, we will be lost. We will have nobody to stand up for the next generation. And having said that, we have another special guest, our liberation poet, and we always try to have a poet on for at least one broadcast a month to honor Sister Lynn, who loved poetry. And before we go to Brother Joel, who will continue where he feels like this evening, we want to open the mic for Professor Louie. Ralph?
Professor Louie, are you in the house?
Yeah, I'm here.
Give us some words of wisdom with your poetry.
All right, I'm going to do it. What does it mean to be working class? Is that something from out of the past? Do we always got to come in last? That's the question I'm going to ask. What does it mean to be working class? Because today you say you're middle class. You can't pay the doctor. Your car needs gas. You're still paying off your college class. What you owe your credit card is never passed. Still you're middle class this and middle class that. Up below a middle class till you eat your hat. Got the gap on your back. You got a little fat. You're still paying for the chair where you just sat. Is it all over just like that? Who stole the good life? Where's it at? Or was middle class just a little dream? Made up for you on your TV screen where everybody's comfy or so it seems and no one ever eats rice and beans. Because in the beginning, there was just two classes. There was the elite and there was the masses. We did the work. They kicked our asses. Most everything passes. There are still two classes, those who got it and those who don't. We think we're going to get it, but really we won't. Those who own the companies and make the big deals, Every deal could cost you a meal, and for real, not too many people hold the power. They make $1 million while they take a shower. There's the owning class and the working class. Where are you at? Are you slow or fast? All you got to do is do the math. If you got a job, you're working class. If you're out of a job, you're really working class. We build the houses, work the fields. We run the hospitals and fix the meals. We make the family and work at home. Sometimes that's the hardest work of all. We clean the office. We teach the kids. Everything around us is something we did. No matter what your color or your name, no matter the country from where you came, the name of the game is still the same. And if the owner works, is he working class? He got his laptop and smartphone. He's moving fast. It all depends. First and last, if he got a bodega or a little machine shop, he works for his money and he works a lot. He might be working for everything he got, but the guy who owns the corporation, he could work all day. It won't change him. He might be a nice guy. He might be a jerk. He makes his big money off of other people's work. You can't make millions going to work and getting paid. You need other people's work to have it made. When we punch the clock, he owns the stock. We do the labor, but he gets the flavor. We make the honey, but he takes the money, because working people make everything. We're the ones make the cash register ring. And when our work goes to someone else's profit, now you got it, and you don't got to ask. That's what makes us working class. And if I talk about class just a little more, your TV says we're starting class war. But the real news has come and gone. The class war is always on. It has been here since the day you were born. We just need to know whose side we're on. If we don't know our own class, take it from the poet, we will always take a beating, and we won't even know it, because your TV is programmed by the owning class, your newspaper programmed by the owning class, your search engine programmed by the owning class. If we don't know we're working class, the owning class will kick our ass. They get a real free pass, because you get no health care, get lousy schools, the TV brings your kids up to act like fools, you get no union, you lose your job, you vote for politicians who think you're a slob, because we sometimes forget there's a bottom and a top, those who got it and those who do not. Better to remember, make no mistake, you're not an owner, you're a worker, and that's the breaks. And I bet there's nobody listening here who made $10 million just this year. So before I waste any more breath, before I talk myself to death, let me ask you to act on a fact that has come to pass. Your ass is in the working class. And before we get to another day, when we open our mouths with something to say, before you speak and the words are gone, it's good to know whose side you're on. And what it means to be working class, is that something from out of the past? Do we always got to come in last? That's the question we got to ask. What does it mean to be working class? And one last little question before I'm gone. Tell me, whose side are you on?
All righty.
Excellent.
Education with poetry. Looking so
all right.
All of your words of wisdom. Hang in there and give us some more a little later. Sister Betty.
All right. Thank you so much, Professor Louis. You're welcome in our house anytime. But without before we go to Jericho, we want Brother Ajaye to hang in there. We got Sister Gwen back. Yippee! And the anarchist is in the house. You all know who I mean, Richie. Before we do all that, just wanted to get your appetites wet for what's coming. Brother Joel, we're going to ask you to give us a few words. We know you're kind of tired, but if you can give us just a few words of wisdom, we would appreciate it. Straight from the deep state, guys.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello? Okay,
yes, we can hear you, Joel.
Okay. So, yes, I was pondering this whole thing with the Democrats moving in. And we've been given a very big build-up of what to expect now that they're coming in there in the House. Supposedly. We'll have nothing to worry about from now on. It'll be nothing but
Hello?
What happened?
We lost you, Joel.
Move on.
Hello, Joel. Okay, Ann, we're going to let you pitch in here. Seems like we kind of lost Joel here. Go ahead, Ann.
But when he left off, he said there was nothing to worry about because the Democrats had taken a house. Ho, ho, ho. And give us some words from our political prisoner.
Okay, well, I do have some wonderful words from Leonard Peltier. This is his annual statement to the Day of Mourning on November 22nd, which will be the 49th annual Day of Mourning. And we just received it. It says, greetings, sisters, brothers, elders, friends, and supporters. Well, here it is, sorry to say, another year, and I'm still writing to you from a prison cell. I am still in pain from my illnesses, with no knowledge of whether I will ever get treatments for them. But I'm alive and still breathing, hoping, wishing, praying for not just my pains, but for all Native nations and the people of the world who care and have positive feelings about what is happening to Mother Earth and against the evils committed by Wasichu in their greed for her natural resources. It doesn't seem as if any changes for the good or safety of Mother Earth will happen soon, but the good-hearted people are fighting back, and some good people are winning in the struggles to beat back some of this evil and to make the changes, the safety networks we need for our grandchildren and great-grandchildren so that they will be able to live happy, successful lives, at least decent lives, that most of the poor underprivileged in my generation never got to experience or enjoy in our short lives. So I sit back and look at the world, and I wonder if I will ever get to see the outside world again, free from this prison cell. At 74, it is not looking too good for that to happen. But I keep my hopes alive and pray as hard as I can that it will happen. If not, when they bury me, I want to be laid to rest face down and with a note pinned to my ass with the words in large bold letters, kiss my ass, just in case someone wants to study my bones years from now. On a more pleasant issue, one of my granddaughters, Ashley, is in college at University of Arizona Flagstaff, and she wants to be a medicine woman. How awesome is that? My baby, a doctor. Wow. How proud am I? You would not believe just how much I am. I could use a little help now and then for her. Don't send it to me, but send it to ILPDC, earmarked for her use only. She's going on a long, hard journey, so she will need help now and then. One day, if she continues her studies to be a medicine woman, I know things can change as time goes by, but if she makes it, she will be an enormous help to Native Nations hospitals. My friend Harvey Arden passed yesterday on Saturday, November 17th. He was a very good and kind man who loved Native people and the poor and sick. We are all going to miss him. I hope he has a good, safe journey in the spirit world, and I hope our relatives will all be there to greet him with open arms. That would be very pleasing to him. See you soon, Mycola. Politically, we are finally making gains in Congress. Two great Native ladies made it in the House of Representatives. They are Shanice Davids, Ho-Chunk of Wisconsin for Kansas, and Deb Halen, Laguna Pueblo for New Mexico. On Pine Ridge, my nephew, Julian Bear Runner, made it as president of the Great Lakota Nation. I'm hearing more states are doing away with Columbus Day. Hey, we may just win the war for survival yet. My last thoughts on this day that we Native people call a day of mourning are for my sisters and brothers' family, by blood and by aim, that are now in the spirit world, and to them I say, Lila Pila Maya, thank you for your love and work for the people. My thoughts are also with the youth, such as the water protectors, and all people, young and old, who are working to protect Mother Earth. I hope someday in the near future to be with you and part of this march and join you in the feast prepared by Native people and wonderful supporters who have joined together today to honor our ancestors. In the spirit of Crazy Horse, Daksha, Leonard Peltier. So,
there
we have some wonderful words, right? And I also had sad announcement that our brother Mujahid Farid, who many of you may know, former prisoner, very friends with many of our political prisoners, he passed this morning. Very sad to say. So if I could find it here, I would actually read the little announcement. Okay. Seem to have gotten lost in here. All right. Anyway, those are Leonard's words, which will be read, of course, on the day of mourning, which is Thursday, There are two buses that are going. There's one that leaves from the Solidarity Center, 147 West 24th Street. You can still call them, 212-633-6646. And the Haitian community also has a bus going from Brooklyn. So there are two. Here it is. Mujahid Farid. This was from Farid's rap family. We are deeply saddened to announce the passing of our dear friend and colleague, Mujahid Farid. Farid died this morning in the comfort of his own home, surrounded by friends, family, and lots of love. It is a great loss for all of us and for the movement for peace and justice. We will dearly miss our beloved Farid. We will honor his legacy every day in our work and lives. The wake will be held on Saturday, November 24th at 10:30 a.m. at Benta's Funeral Home, 630 St. Nicholas Avenue, New York, New York, which is on the corner of 141st Street, with the service to follow at 11:30 a.m. There will also be a memorial in the coming weeks, date and time to be announced. With love, Farid's rap family. And Farid did tremendous work, along together with rap, in changing the composition of the parole board in New York State and changing the parole laws in New York State, which has led so far to the release of Herman Bell and Robert Seth Hayes. Because without those changes, those two brothers would still be behind the walls. So, Farid, wherever you may be on the other side, we thank you.
Well, we thank you, Anne, for your great work. And as I say, we are all going to have to be like Anne, visit our political prisoners, do the work. And
The person
ado,
I could most thank for that is my mother. And my mother also passed today. So, sad day in the world. But my mom is one of the greatest human beings you could ever meet, and every principle that I live my life by was taught to me by my mother and my father. So I'm hoping that right now she's in heaven seeing my dad, who she hasn't seen since 1976. That would be a great reunion. And I will not probably be able to go to Farid's memorial because my mother's is on the same day, probably at the same time.
Well, Anne, listen, you have had love of your mother for all of those years. And as I said, when my mother, how can I be sad when I've had this much love and education for so many years? But it hurts. We're going to hurt with you. And we're going to be close to you, and we're going to hurt with you. Much love to you and your family.
Oh, sure.
Nothing.
My mom would have been 90 years old tomorrow.
Okay. She hung in there. Comrade Ann Lamb's mom has passed.
And my mom.
Love you, Ann. We're with
you. My mom is the
reason
I'm the person I am. Love you, too.
You have family. You have big family. Many family members.
We're your family. We're so honored to come on to share this with us. And thank you so much. Thank you, Anne. Thank you for all you've done. And people don't understand, when you do political work, you give up so much in terms of special moments with your family, because the family of the world becomes your responsibility. And Anne has never stopped visiting political prisoners. Every Saturday, she and her sidekick, off they go with the food, with whatever medicine they need that they will allow in. And so when she hurts, we all hurt. And I want to send greetings from Larry Pinkney. He's been having a fight with AOL. That's why he's not on tonight. All of a sudden, he's having all kinds of difficulties with his email. And I think all of us have been there, and we recognize what he's going through. We want to see if Brother Joel is back with us for a few moments before we go on to Sister Gwen. And Brother Joel,
hello?
Yes, we hear you. Good, you're back.
Okay. I never went away. It's somehow this connection is not that reliable, and I have my suspicions about why. That would be, and that has nothing to do with the with the any Democrats or Republicans, every one of them.
No, my only
problem is
with turn. Figure out a way to make money off.
Joel, there's so much background noise.
I know, but we
I'm in a quiet room.
Can hardly hear you.
I guess it's still.
That's good.
Still from the computer, from the phone. This better?
Yeah, that's better.
Oh, okay.
That's good, right there.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm saying that I think there's a double-sided thing to this because it's true that they go for the old rope-a-dope between the Democrats. They think everything is going to be for those who think that everything is going to be sweetness and light, but the Democrats controlling the House, but at the same time, you could have had an alternative experience, let's say, where people went into a massive surge for the Republican type thinking, the more open, outright condoning of all kinds of fascist and genocidal tendencies, rather than the hypocrisy of the Democrats, which leads to a more human side, even though we know that they're going to betray that. And they've already given signs, even before they've been sworn in, they're talking about how they want to work with Trump to help him get his agenda passed if he will agree to an intensified investigation, for example, by the Mueller Commission. In other words, they'll say that we'll go to the right on the domestic agenda if he goes to the right on the foreign policy agenda. And that's pretty much, and this is before they even get in. And we have to remember some of the things that they have done during when they're in control of the presidency. For example, the signing into law of the giving the power of the government in the National Defense Appropriations Act, giving the military the power to declare people to be enemy combatants because of their politics. There's no exact criteria of how they can do that, and then they can detain or dispose of, let's use that kind of a word, those people whom they consider enemy combatants. And that was one of it was a side discussion during the Kavanaugh period when they were all focused on whether he attempted to rape a woman in his high school days and whether or not he may be an alcoholic and questions like that. But then in one line of questioning by Lindsey Graham, the whole focus was on whether or not criminal trials could be conducted in this country according to the rules and practices of military tribunals. This is actually, this was all over the internet. It was on every medium, I'd say for about 1 hour. And then all of a sudden it was shut down. It was not reported upon. It was just, it never happened. And most of our media are totally silent. I have to say, even the left media have pretty much left that line of questioning alone, and that was more important and explosive than anything about Kavanaugh's personal history. Of course, the issue there is that the Supreme Court is going to be much more openly racist, and that's a contagious thing, because when you have these supposed learned judges spewing that kind of racist filth openly, it gives a lot of the rank-and-file population a certain legitimization to that kind of thinking, and it softens everything up. So I say that when people vote against that kind of stuff, even if they're voting for sellouts, it still means that they're at least beginning to stir, and they're at least trying to resist something, which is what they see as the only shot that they've got, is that the open, outright racists and fascists could be reined in to some extent. People are not organized independently of the big business parties that have always been part of the racism because of its profitability, because of its divide and conquer nature. And both parties are partnered in this, although they want to make us think that a fight is going on. They come up to us and they say, listen, we can hit you with a left hook or we can hit you with a straight right. Which one will you take? That's what the elections are about. Which one will you take? But the reason is that we have no organizations right now that are independent, that are of any that look to have immediate impressive strength. So people feel that it's just Tweedledee, Tweedledum, it's the only thing out there. But I think that one of the symptomatic things about the Trump presidency is that there has been a tremendous loss of confidence among people that used to really believe in the establishment, and today are more bitter and disappointed and angry about the entire establishment, and so they were willing to go along with somebody who pretended to be coming from a different angle. At least he was able to pose as the FU candidate to the establishment, and this is what I think appealed to a lot of that growing anger. But it puts us in a very difficult position, but also it gives us a tremendous opportunity because we on the revolutionary left are the ones that really have the solution to all of the problems that afflict the entire population. We propose to reorganize society on the basis of human need instead of private profit and the sacrifice of human need to that private profit icon. And that's,
well, Joel, we're going to have to talk about solutions in another program, but you're on the right track. We'll have to get to that, but we'll have to go the next. Thank you so much for that analysis. Sister Betty?
Well, I'm just saying we have to get more aggressive in making that appeal and riding that anger to a revolutionary height, even if many of the spots out going in the wrong direction at first, because after all, we're competing with a very well-funded and well-trained propaganda machine that's trying to pull people in the other direction. So we have to get more aggressive, and there's actually more hope that finally we can pierce the apathy and begin to mobilize people based on their anger at the system.
Thanks again for that, Joel. We must do that, and that is our job. Sister Gwen, your mic is open.
Good evening, everybody. I have to say that as I was sitting here, I'm really so moved tonight. I really, really am. I had a really long day at work, and, you know, you get jerked around, and you never know, you do a fantastic job and you never know whether you're going to be working again tomorrow or the next day. And anyway, so I just wanted to thank, I'm so sorry, the man who wrote the poem who opened the show, and I can't remember his name. I'm sorry. I'm having a senior moment, and I'm not a senior, by the way. Okay, Brother Louis, thank you for telling my story tonight. So that was my story. You told it. You said it. And I really appreciated it. And then I wanted to talk about Anne, and I wanted to say, Anne, your grace is astounding. You truly have grace. And it is amazing to me that you could be on the show tonight with the loss of your mother. Your heart must be broken, but she did raise you so well. I don't know you very well, except for what you tell us every week, but I am truly inspired to know somebody is doing the work that you're doing, because it's truly the work of God, if you ask me. And I think she's watching over you. People said that to me. My husband died, and you know, they are watching over us. And I just think it was wonderful. And I also wanted to say that when you read the letter by Leonard Peltier, I was so moved. And I was also thinking, you know, it's a piece of history in your hand. You realize that his case is a historical case. These letters, unfortunately or fortunately, they're going to be part of history. And it's amazing that you're holding that in your hand, that this story of Leonard Peltier is going to keep going through long after he dies. People will be talking about it. And you have a piece of history in your hand. So I wanted to just acknowledge that. And, of course, Joel, my friend Joel, he's utterly brilliant. And I am so appreciative of everything he says. And Ralph and Betty, you too. Gorgeous people. So that's my feelings for you guys. I don't mean to be warm and mushy, but it's just the holiday is coming up, and there are things to be grateful for. So I'm grateful for everybody and their hard work. And I wanted to also say that this week I've talked a lot about with others about BAI, and it is something I'm going to bring up just because I am sure that we've all come together because of WBAI, whether we love the station in its current form or we don't like it, or, you know, but it's been here over the years. So I just wanted to make people know, probably what they already know, that they're struggling for money. And I don't know whether the ship is going to sink or not, to be honest with you. But they need things very desperately. They very desperately need people that know bookkeeping and audit work, and they need people that can do that in a voluntary way. It doesn't have to be a full-time job, but it would really help if people would volunteer their time, or people know people that would volunteer their time to help out with those tasks, which are unbelievably important, and yet we don't have the resources, it doesn't look like at this time, to pay for anything like that. And I am not a board member right now, and I'm not speaking in any kind of official tone. I'm just passing it on to the rest of you. So with that, the only thing I want to say about politics this week is, boy, I'd love to run for the public advocate for the city of New York. I really, really would.
You could be very good at it.
I had an idea that it would be so wonderful. Now, this is a really shorty election, but if I was able to at least get in, you know, there's only two other guys that are running. And it's a little easier than a regular run because you can get Democrat and Republican signatures. It doesn't matter who signs your petition, just get the signature. But I love to fight battles on behalf of other people. I love to do it. And I have some good wins under my belt. Maybe that's why my last name is Goodwin. I don't know.
Occurred
to me. We do. Well, that is my slogan. We fight the good battles and win. But I'm considering that. I really am considering doing this. It'll be a rush, rush, rush. But if I do it, I'm going to ask all you people in the different boroughs to get some petitions signed for me, because it would be so exciting. And I would love to be able to advocate on the behalf of these political prisoners. How exciting would that be? Nobody's talking about that. And yet I've been privy to this conversation every week.
Run, Gwen, run. We're with you.
Okay.
And on that note,
okay,
we want to go to our anarchist before we close out with Brother Aja, a longtime Bishop Aja, who is a longtime acolyte of Sister of Mother Queen Mother Moore. Boy, I'm really tripping tonight. Brother Richie, your mic is open. Remember, we've got to leave time for one more speaker before Ralph gets back on. Brother Richie, your mic is open.
Hello, everybody. This is
hey, Richie.
Rich speaking from
the anarchist world, which has nothing to do with voting. As Emma Goldman said, if voting did anything, they'd make it illegal. And I guarantee you they would. I just got a letter from, as we know, our friend Michael Kimball in Alabama.
Oh, good.
I got a letter from him a couple of days ago. He said he's on lockdown again.
Yeah.
And last time he got a parole hearing, 2 out of 3 voted to release him. The one guy voted not to release him. But they released people who actually are done major anti-society stuff. And Michael is the only case I know in the political prison realm that is a real stand-your-ground case. And he said the riot squad is back on his tail, and they are back in the prison attacking him again. They broke his ribs last time, and now they're back at it again, attacking a prison instead of dealing with it. And he also said that an anarchist that supports him has been in touch with Herman Bell, that Herman has his own apartment, and he's driving around, and he's doing okay, and he's in contact with Herman Bell, one of the Michael Kimball supporters, Rob Cap. He said that Herman Bell is doing fine in New York, and he's learning to drive and has his own apartment. So this is the work the anarchists do with everybody. And we have to get Michael out. We have to get him more support. I'll be on the bus tomorrow, Thursday. And us anarchists, we got to get the more word out there what anarchism really is. Because people do not understand. Anarchists have helped regular average people, and they don't even understand what that is anymore, because we have been marginalized to all we do is break windows. And we're just 20-year-old kids living at home for free. And that's just silly. That's not real anarchist. So Michael also says, and I think this is very pointed, to say, yeah, I'd love to be wearing my own clothes, sleeping in a real bed, able to soak in a tub, etc. Ideally, right. Miss all that and more. That's why I have to get away from these other people and what's going on with him. So we need to do more. The anarchist political prisons, I said, and I lost my dear hippie brother who guided me when I was young, and I'm going to give all my love to you, and I'm sorry about hearing about your mother. And as we say, at least we had people like that in our families that guided us and cared about us. I had my brother George, and I saved the world. Let's get these political prisons out. Let's not even waste our time voting and even believing in that silliness. And Emma Goldman said, if voting did anything, they make it illegal. Let's really think about that. And she also said, if I can't dance at the revolution, I'm not going. That's the update on Michael Kimball. And I got a letter from Stanford Gang, and she's trying to get into a correct prison for her gender. And she's also waiting on what's going to happen with her appeals, that the new governor's in there. But she's did get a decent ruling on that, and we're all waiting for the hearing on Mamiya.
Okay, thank you so much for that, Rich. Okay, see you soon, and maybe I'll make that meeting Friday.
Yes, I want to invite you.
Okay, Brother Ajaye, your mic is open. Bishop Ajaye.
Okay,
your mic is
yes. Yes, free the land, free our political prisoners, and my condolence to the brother on his loss. I just want to speak briefly on the Democratic pushing Michelle Obama, Oprah, and who knows who else, meaning they don't have anyone politically substantial. Joe Biden, who was so weak, he allowed Barack Obama to talk him out of a run for president for Hillary to run. That's the shaky ground you're standing on as Democrats.
Yep.
Trump is just about almost a shoe-in for another term. Last, if I may, if you've seen the interview with Robin Roberts and Michelle, and I was surprised because she's a moderate, she asked Michelle about the security guard that was killed by the police in Chicago.
Right.
And her answer was, she don't want to focus in on the down things, but the things of hope.
Yes.
To show you who she says she come from a diverse neighborhood. And so that's to show you who Michelle is. and some other things she had asked Michelle about African Americans. She just said she don't want to deal with the down things. And, you know, one must look at Obama. He did something for the Iranians, the nuclear deal and the hundreds of millions of dollars, Cuba embargo, specifically the gay community, the military and marriage and all of that, the DACA with the immigrants. I don't think African Americans can tell me of one single thing that Obama did for them, you know. And so if you're just voting to vote or voting to be taken advantage of, I was back during that time, and we did not fight for you just to vote or to be taken advantage of, but to have the right of choice. And the right of choice says, I have the right to vote if I want, and I don't have the right to vote if I don't want, you see. And so without that, it's just a dictatorship. You know, and so I think that a lot of people have got to wake up and question what are they voting for and why they're voting and what they're supposed to be expecting for their vote. So I just wanted to put that out there. I know there's not much time, and so we need to do some critical internal thinking. So I'll leave it at that.
Well, thank you so much, Bishop. This is Ralph again, and you know we've been talking on this program about political slavery, the practice of political slavery. That is doing political work without political pay. What is our political pay? We, number one, we want our political prisoners freed. Those people gave their lives for us. Is our basic demand. We will not be political slaves. We will not support anyone who does not speak up and support our work, our energy to free political prisoners. And one of the things I said, Blasio and Cuomo ended their political career when they said that Herman Bell should not be free. There was, their opinion is there was never any need for resistance. And I say if anyone was awake, if any of the people who talk politics, talk Democratic Party, were not in a deep sleep, who were not zombies, would have gone that city. Was there no need for Nat Turner? Was there no need for the Civil War? Was there no need for resistance by the people? And any politician who says that there was no need for the human rights struggle of the 60s or any struggle should not be able to run for political demands. And if you don't have a demand, you're a political slave, Sister Betty.
I just want to revisit something Joel said, which I hope he will bring back next week. He said that there are some elections that when you participate in them, you are telling the government, not in my name. And within that context, when we struggled to get Gwen on the ballot as an advocate fighting for political prisoners, that's our way of giving the people a choice to send a message to the government. But on the other hand, Richie is right. No capitalist, no slaver is ever going to let you vote slavery out of office. And so we will have to struggle with the deep state. Anybody else want to chime in on that before we go? We got 60 seconds.
Well, thank you so much for that, because as we all know, freedom isn't free. And Dan, patience.
wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round world.